we are joined by
Bob Swaim here.
Swaim.
Right, with an M.
Enunciate. We're from Philly, man. We'll enunciate nothing.
That was enunciate.
Yes, there you go. And you're from the National Transportation Safety Board. Did I get that right?
That's right.
I like to have it written in front of me because I'm brain dead.
That's right. The joke is, you wreck them, we check them.
Oh, there we go. Haven't heard that one.
Okay.
All right, NTSB humor.
Well, I guess it's rather dark humor at times.
Yeah. I can just imagine the one that starts at a pilot and an airplane and a thunderstorm all get together.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've seen that one.
What happens next?
Yeah.
We've seen too much of that, actually.
Now, you have a paper here. We would say a white paper in the technical world. I don't know why they call them white papers. The safety of experimental amateur-built aircraft. You guys have done a study comparing the amateur-built segment safety record versus all of general aviation, right?
That's correct. We have a display over in the Federal Pavilion, which is northeast of the tower, north of the Flying Magazine tent. And one of the things we're highlighting this year is this experimental amateur-built study, where we're talking about the safety records and where people are having trouble and where they're getting hurt physically with their amateur-built airplane, their experimental airplanes. We are finding that they do have a higher accident rate than the certificated airplanes. And we're also finding there are some survivability issues. Once you do have an accident, there's a difference in fatality rates. But what's better for the owners and the builders is that we can go into why. And that's the kind of thing that is highlighted over there. We've got some handout CDs with the entire report that we can give folks. And, so free for taking. And please do come get them for your chapter. Take them home to your experimental chapter.
And learn something.
Hopefully.
Now, interestingly enough, obviously the home builds all have a first flight. And that is included in your study. But the first flights of certificated airplanes, are there any statistics on that? On what, I mean, the manufacturers probably don't want to release that. Oh, yeah, the first three prototypes crashed. No, they probably don't want to tell us that, do they?
We actually do all the N-numbered airplanes in the U.S. And so we do have the statistics on those. They have their teething problems, but they also have a big difference in. They go into it with a test plan that's worked out beforehand. So it starts out with, let's run it down the runway, let's get it in the air, and then let's open up the test plan. As opposed to that, we've got some photos in our display, which will show you how a number of the low-time people or people who've been working on their airplane for a long time, not been flying, they take out a new experimental airplane, and they get off the ground and they like the way it feels, like the way it handles. And for example, we have one fellow who had just a few hours in the airplane, and he, rather than a test flying program, he was running low buzz jobs up and down a river and wound up stalling the airplane with a very steep turn right near the river. That's not part of what would be an irrational test plan.
Yeah,
no,
I definitely think not.
That did not end well.
No, it did not. He became one with a doc.
Oh, boy.
So.
Ouch.
But we do have these, and like I say, we did it in conjunction with EAA as far as collecting the data. The information that's coming out of it is one of a kind. It's never been done before. And all the information is to give back to EAA. It is to give back to the membership. And so hopefully people can learn something, and we don't have to go out on those accidents.
This information will be available to the public on the internet as well.
Good point. It is on our website. Sometimes the websites are challenging to drill down through, but right now I think currently we have it on our webpage or homepage for the website. So you can go right to a hot link with ntsb.gov.
How do, and I'm not sure how familiar you are with the specific data, but how do the engines stack up? I mean, a lot of guys use certificated engines in experimentals. A lot of guys are converting car engines or doing whatever. I mean, what's the reliability of those conversion engines versus certificated engines?
The certificated engines are generally used in the experimental airplanes. So the engine itself comes in pretty close, pretty similar as far as the data. Where the problem is, and we have a lot of this, is with fuel flow getting to the engine, with people trying to run the electronic ignitions off batteries and off the airplane. And of course, if you have a chafe, a short, a wire fails, then all of a sudden, whatever's left in the battery is all you have the time to get to the ground. And some people just don't put that together.
Well, electricity is a mystery for a lot of people.
Right. We actually, in this study, Dr. Groff and Dr. Ellingstad, who did the study, they went and looked at the British, UK, and Canadian models of how they certificate their experimentals, get them into the air, and they found that a simple fuel flow test, pre-flight fuel flow test, made a huge difference in statistics. The British go a lot farther as far as having a test plan for the experimental airplanes, and it makes a huge difference. Their accident rate is a fraction of ours.
Interesting.
The other thing that was found is that not just first flights of the airplane, but people who are low time who buy an experimental airplane, they have just as much trouble. Their accident rate is almost as bad as those who go for a first flight in a brand new experimental airplane. So if you're out there buying an RV and have a whole bunch of Cessna time, those folks have a huge bump in the curve as far as getting hurt.
Well, you got to learn that aircraft.
You got to learn the airplane.
That's right.
And someone says, hey, it flies just like a Cessna. Well, maybe it does not.
Right.
Well,
right.
It would seem to me, if I was in the position of, say, picking up an RV of whatever number, and all I've got is, you know, Cessna and Piper time, I would be definitely looking to get some instruction time, to get some seat time in somebody else's RV so that I can get used to it beforehand. To me, that makes sense.
Unfortunately, we have a number of people who may get a flight or two. They consider that sufficient. That's not really training and getting proficient in the airplane. So you're absolutely right. Absolutely right.
Well, that's the key word, proficient.
Right.
And well, the other thing is you got to be exposed to the airplane in all of its operating environments. You know, landing crosswinds, landing nighttime, it's all different.
Well, that would be all a part of getting proficient in the airplane. I'd like to have 10 hours. If I'm buying an RV, I'd like to schedule with somebody 10 hours of flight time so that I can get some experience with the airplane before I get up in my own airplane.
Absolutely. You get out of your, you know, Cherokee 140 and you get into a Glass Air 3 and all of a sudden you're going with light stick and 200 mile an hour.
That's a recipe for trouble if you're not proficient.
Right.
Now, how many times have you seen first flights done in less than optimal conditions, either weather-wise or they're flying out of an airport that's kind of short?
That we've definitely got history on. The short runway or the I'm going to do it where nobody will see me. And we know a number of first flights end with a pranged airplane and it winds up in a pickup truck and we don't hear about it, you know, unless somebody gets hurt bad enough or the FAA finds out. Those do happen. But the bigger problems are the things that we've already discussed, the low time pilot, the lack of proficiency.
What about control installation problems? A throttle cable came off or it was installed improperly and jammed or something like that. I mean, those got to happen.
Excellent point. We do have the, I talked about control as far as the engine serving as far as fuel flow and electrics. Control cables, control cable routing, that's definitely right up there. I know where I was going with my thought. Surprise to us, we thought from, you know, the grapevine, we would hear a lot about airframe failures. We're not seeing those. The experimentals are actually doing fairly well as airframes, as far as engine installations, the engine itself. It's the systems between the two and the pilots holding the stick. But as far as airframe failures, we've only had one model, and it's only one model from one manufacturer that has had a series of wing foldings and actual airframe failures. And a lot of folks got attention to that model, and it seems to be doing a lot better now.
Well, another question for you. You were talking about, people flying their, doing their first flights away from other people. What about the opposite side of the coin? You've got friends and family and everybody's in from East Jibip to see you fly this airplane.
And the pressure is on to fly.
The pressure is on.
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely. And we do see a number of those. We've got a photo of one of those over there in the booth in the federal building.
Okay.
So we definitely are inviting folks to come get a copy of that CD. It's got the experimental airplane study. We've got the glass cockpit study that was done. How does glass cockpit as far as safety rate versus round dials? And we've also got the seatbelt study all on that one CD that's there for picking up.
Very good.
Sounds like a plan.
And you're in the International Federal Pavilion, which is north of the tower.
That's right. Look for the Flying Magazine 10 if you're on the flight line and go to north. You got the EA building and then us.
Very good.
Very good.
Well, we'll recommend that everyone go by us.
Absolutely.
Great.
Thank you for joining us, sir.
And thank you both.